Hare Hare After Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati left Allahabad for Calcutta, Abhay keenly felt the responsibility of working on behalf of his spiritual master. At the initiation, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta had instructed Abhay to study Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which outlined the loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, and explained how a devotee can advance in spiritual life. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu was a law book for devotional service, and Abhay would study it carefully. He was glad to increase his visits to the Allahabad Center and to bring new people. Even at his first meeting with his spiritual master, he had received the instruction to preach the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And now he began steadily and carefully considering how to do so. Preaching was a responsibility at least as binding as that of home and business. Even in his home, he wanted to engage as far as possible in preaching. He discussed with his wife about his plans for inviting people into their home, offering them prasad, and holding discussions about Krishna. She didn't share his enthusiasm. Srila Prabhupada. My wife was a devotee of Krishna, but she had some other idea. Her idea was just to worship the deity at home and live peacefully. My idea was preaching. It means they're devotees because they're in their families. They've always worshipped Radha and Krishna. So like that. So she wanted to do, but she just wanted, you know, what it was happening in the home, the peacefulness of that, the stableness of that. She didn't want to expand into anything else. In other words, she was very pious, yes. Listen to classes instead of chanting rounds. means it's not that chanting rounds isn't important, but our quality of our chanting and all that will increase according to our Krishna consciousness, right? So when we hear in the class, then we actually understand what is devotional service. Otherwise, we're performing devotional service. And if we're, you know, very fortunate, we may have the proper attitude and everything and please Krishna. If not, then it might become more just ritualistic. We perform the forms, but we don't actually understand devotional service itself. So that's why it's important to hear. Srila Prabhupada's qualification to get initiated was his ability to hear. Right? So that's what makes him special. So we see those ones that were there. Srila Prabhupada stayed, Sridhar Maharaj stayed, and then by the sounds of it, one other devotee stayed. So now, I don't know who that other devotee was, but you get the understanding that, because Prabhupada, then he was able to preach and write purports and that. Prabhupada said Sridhar Maharaj could write purports. So I don't know who the third person was, but basically speaking, you can see as those who stayed, they became the big preachers. Because how much you hear is how much you can speak, like that. So your japa then, of course, is kirtan, but its foundation is shravana. So that it's very important to be able to hear. If there's no opportunity to hear, then of course we chant. But if there's an opportunity to hear, then we would hear. Like that. Yes. Is it considered to be disrespectful? Depends on the case. If it's somebody, let's see, in other words, if it's someone who's within sadhana bhakti below bhava, then you might consider it that way. If they're above bhava, then it may be, or in bhava or above, it may be just that it's just their habit, they're always chanting, though they're completely listening. It's just, you know, just like you breathe, so then they chant. That was the case with, I think it was Ramachandra Khan. Somebody, he was like the head of the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan. And there was one lady Vaishnav who, that was her habit. She was just always chanting. It didn't matter what was happening, she was chanting. So she was listening in the class. And the speaker of the class thought that she was just chanting and was not paying attention to the class, so he got very upset. And then after she explained it, then he still was upset. And so then, because of that, then slowly he diminished in his devotional prowess. So that's why I'm saying it varies. If you're on the Uttamadhikari platform, then don't worry that they're offensive. If they're below that, then it's the etiquette that generally one wouldn't do that, right? Now, if one is, how do you say? But on one's own, one, of course, can be always tolerant and things like that. And, you know, you consider if the person's more advanced than you, then you don't worry about it. But it's more, so therefore, it'd be more the individual. They would have to consider this. Is that okay? Okay. So in other words, his wife was very pious. Like you have a lot of families like that, extremely pious, and their piety extends up to actual devotional activities. But they don't want to take that step or that commitment to be, you know, absorbed so much into this piety that they're able to get initiated or take up preaching. Does that make sense? It was not possible for Abhay to travel with his spiritual master, or even to see him often. His pharmaceutical business kept him busy, and he traveled frequently. Whenever possible, however, he tried to time a business trip to Calcutta when his spiritual master was also there. Thus, over the next 4 years, he managed to see his spiritual master perhaps a dozen times. That means 3 times a year. Whenever Abhay visited Calcutta, the assistant librarian at the Gaudiya Math, Nityananda Brahmachari, would meet him at Howrah train station with a 2-horse carriage belonging to the Math. Wow. Nityananda saw Abhay as an unusually humble and tolerant person. As they rode together to the Math, Abhay would inquire eagerly into the latest activities of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, his traveling, his publishing, how many centers were currently open, how his disciples were doing. They wouldn't talk much about Abhay's business. Abhay would stay at the Gaudiya Math, usually for about 5 days. Sometimes he would visit one of his sisters who lived in Calcutta. But his main reason for coming was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and Abhay would take advantage of every opportunity to hear him. Abhay didn't try to become a leader in the inner management of the Gaudiya Math. His spiritual master had initiated 18 sannyasis who carried out most of the preaching and leadership of the mission. Abhay was always the householder, occupied with his own business and family, never living within the Math except for brief visits. And yet he began to develop a close relationship with his spiritual master. Sometimes Abhay would go to see him at the Chaitanya Math, at the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya in Mayapur. One day at the Chaitanya Math, Abhay was in the courtyard when a large poisonous snake crawled out in front of him. Abhay called out for his godfathers, but when they came, everyone simply stood looking, uncertain what to do. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta came out on the veranda of the second floor, glanced down, saw the snake, and immediately ordered, "Kill it." A boy then took a large stick and killed the snake. Srila Prabhupada. So I thought, how is it that Guru Maharaj ordered the snake to be killed? I was a little surprised, but later on I saw this verse, and then I was very glad. Modeta sadhura api vichiksha sarpa hatya. Quote, even saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake. It had remained a doubt how Guru Maharaj ordered the snake to be killed. But when I read this verse, I was very much pleased that this creature or creatures like the snake should not be shown any mercy. Right? Because the snakes, scorpions, these poisonous living entities like this, then they just for no reason will bite. They just get annoyed, get agitated, and they'll bite. Right? So they have the ability to cause serious harm or even kill someone. But it's just because they're in a bad mood. Right? Therefore, then it says in the Shastra that a poisonous snake and scorpions like that, then they can be killed, or they should be killed. Right? Because then they get purified. Okay? Like that. But other snakes, you don't bother. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was reputed to be so austere and so strong in argument against other philosophies that even his own disciples were cautious in approaching him if he were sitting alone or if they had no specific business with him. Yet even though Abhay's contact with him was quite limited, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would always treat him kindly. Srila Prabhupada, whenever I met my Guru Maharaj, he would always treat me very affectionately. Sometimes my godbrothers would criticize because I would talk a little freely with him, and they would quote this English saying, "Fools rush in where angels fear to tread." But I would think, "Fool? Well, maybe. But that is the way I am." My Guru Maharaj was always very, very affectionate to me. When I offered obeisances, he used to return, "Dasosmi, I am your servant." Because there's the element is that the others were worried because of the formality and everything like this, but there's always also the worry just, yes.
What does treat
mean? What does?
Treat.
Treat. Deal. You understand? You deal with some affectionately, you're affectionate towards them. So treat is, you know, the nature of your interaction. You interact with the other boys, so you treat them nicely, or you treat them not nicely. So your interaction is good or not good. You understand? So treat is, you know, generally it would be, what is your mood towards the other person? Okay? So they're worried, you know, one is the formality. So therefore, if they don't know how to act outside of that, therefore they're uncomfortable if anybody else can. Then you have the element of that it may be just due to their respect on the level of just ritualistic respect, or it can be coming from the platform as they themselves are a little fearful. So if someone else is not fearful, then that also then they don't feel comfortable. In Gopakumar, when he went to Vaikuntha, then he would sit and talk with Vishnu and, you know, all kinds of things, and they would discuss about Krishna and Vrindavan, and Vishnu would even manifest his form as Krishna and play on his flute and manifest cows, and they'd have a great time talking all kinds of things. So then the residents of Vaikuntha, then they kind of split into two groups. One group that like this felt he wasn't being formal enough. Here's God, the Supreme Lord, the Lord of Vaikuntha, the Lord of all opulences, the Lord of Lakshmi. And he's just sitting around and laughing and goofing with them. Right? And then others, then the more mature ones. That was the general ones. And they're in one sense correct, because in their mood it would be inappropriate. Because they're worshiping on reverence, and therefore there would be no other way of dealing. Then, then a more mature group, you know, like that, then they said that, no, no, it's fine, leave him alone, because he's just interacting with the Lord. So he's bringing pleasure to the Lord. Our business is to serve the Lord and give him pleasure. So by his more informal dealings, it brings the Lord pleasure. Therefore, we should not disturb him. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, if that is our mood and we're like that, that's fine. But if others are able to deal in that more informal way and it's pleasing, then we should leave that alone. But if somebody doesn't actually know how to deal in an informal way respectfully, and they deal that way and it's causing a disturbance, then something would be said. That makes sense? Yes? What do you think? Yes? No? Maybe? So, do you think, therefore, because of what we discussed, the economic schemes of Russia or China was, you know, something that we should recommend to other peoples of the world? Or do you think it's something we should more seriously look at? You don't know. And Brother Bear, what was his opinion? I see. Now, I mean, see, there's every chance then, you know, if you had come across a gingerbread house, would you have eaten it or would you have not eaten it? Or would you have considered it depended whether it was a codicil or not? You don't know. So if it was a codicil, would you have eaten the gingerbread house? He says no. No. Okay. Why not?
I would have taken it and kept it for the next day.
He would have taken it and kept some for the next day. Okay. Looking forward to the future, right? You know, like that. Yes? Okay. Sometimes as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta paced back and forth chanting the Hare Krishna mantra aloud while fingering his beads, Abhay would enter the room and also chant, walking alongside his spiritual master. Once when Abhay entered Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's room, his spiritual master was sitting on a couch, and Abhay took a seat beside him on an equal level. But then he noticed that all the other disciples in the room were sitting on a lower level at their spiritual master's feet. Abhay kept his seat, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said nothing of it. But Abhay never again sat on an equal level with his spiritual master. Like that. Because technically on a seat means if it's a single seat or something that's special for the spiritual master, you don't sit on it. Does that make sense? Let's say you're going to a program, depending upon what it is. If it's a formal program and you go to someone's house, and so then they give a couch, right? You know, so two or three people can sit, but they give a couch for him to sit on. Then and that is, he's sitting on that in a formal situation. The situation itself is formal. Then one would generally not sit on that couch, right? Does that make sense? Because that's been designated as his seat. If it's a bench or a couch or something like that, that it's not designated, then one can sit on that same level, right? Unless it's an extremely formal situation, one would avoid it. Does that make sense? But it's like, let's say you're going to Navadvip, you're going on the boat. How do you sit in a lower level unless you sit down in the bilge in the bottom? Right? Right? You know what bilge is? No? Bilge is where the engine is. In the boats. Okay, so in a car, that's not bilge. I see. Under the? Under the planks of wood. Okay. Anything else? Any other ideas? What bilge is? The river. All of them are quite close, but none of them are quite. The river is the cause of bilge. Bilge is below the planks of the boat. And generally the motor is down, not actually in the bilge, it would be bad for the boat, but it's down in that general area.
Bilge is the leakage of the river that comes
Yes, the water that comes in from outside the boat seeps in and therefore is in the bottom of the boat, all that kind of water, that's bilge. Right? Does that make sense? So if they're sitting in a boat, you don't have to sit down in the water there. Okay? If you want to stand on your head in the water, that's another thing, but then your feet would be above the spiritual master's head, so that would be a good idea either. Okay? Yes? Does that make sense? So, therefore, on a bench, on a rock, on a mat, on a boat, on a carriage, you can't sit somewhere else. You get into the car, you can't sit on the floor. Right? Does that make sense? So these things, then it's understood you sit at the same level because the situation is informal. If it's formal, then spiritual master will be sitting there and you sit somewhere else. He's sitting in the back seat, you sit in the front. He's sitting in front, you sit in the back. You know what I'm saying? Unless otherwise instructed. Does that make sense? Right? You're sitting on the mat. You can't sit lower than the mat. Right? Right? Does that make sense? So these are practical situations that you can sit. So technically speaking here is that says, you know, they're chanting together, he sits on the couch. In one sense, there's technically not anything wrong in him sitting there. But at the same time is because then in a class situation, then that couch is where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sits. So then the disciples in that situation wouldn't sit on the couch with him. You understand? So then Srila Prabhupada was very careful about that. But Bhaktisiddhanta didn't say anything because one, technically it wasn't so wrong. And two is that he understood the mood. So there, the lesson, if there is a lesson to learn, he had learned it. Right? Like that. And sometimes it's that if no one else complains, it's not a problem. But if people complain, then you make the adjustment. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, technically it may not be wrong. But because it disturbs others, then why disturb others? Yes? No? You know what disturb is? Anyone know? What is disturb?
Annoying someone.
What?
Annoying someone. Pushing someone.
Harassing someone. Okay. Disturbing by harassing. Anything else? Any other? Yes. Somebody? Someone was annoying you, and then you get disturbed. Yes. Okay. So that could mean they're harassing, right? Okay. Always been asking the wrong questions. Very good. Very good answer.
I'm not supposed to be like
Sunday?
Yeah, the
yes. Therefore, they have realization. They can speak. Therefore, that's the point. Once in a room with many disciples, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was speaking and Abhay listening when an old man beside Abhay motioned to him. As Abhay leaned over to hear what the man wanted, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta suddenly spoke out in annoyance at the two apparently inattentive students. Babu, he first addressed the old man besides Abhay. Do you think you have purchased me with your 150 rupees per month donation? And then turning to Abhay, why don't you come up here and speak instead of me? Abhay was outwardly mortified, yet he treasured the rebuke. It was in a private meeting that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta once told Abhay of the risk he took by preaching so boldly. Okay, that's another point. So in here is that donations, in other words, donations given to a Brahmin. One should never feel one gains some benefit by that. You understand? Otherwise, the quality of the charity is reduced. In other words, if you give the charity with no idea that there's something you want back from it, there's no conditions, there's no anything, that quality, that charity will be very good, right? If you feel you shouldn't have given that charity, if you feel that by giving the charity now, you know, they owe you so much or you can get so much benefits, then the quality of the charity is reduced. Does that make sense? The quality of the charity is reduced. So one always has to be very, very careful about that. So that's why then he mentioned, is, you know, this guy gives 150 rupees a month, which is a lot of money in those days. And so then, you know, so does that mean that you're, you know, how you say, you know, you purchased us by that? So it's always, the point is Brahmins are always independent. So if it means that the person feels they've been purchased, they purchased by giving the donation, the Brahmin would give the donation back. Right? The Brahmin would rather have nothing than take a donation and have the other person feel or act as if now he's purchased you. Does that make sense? It was in private meeting that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta once told Abhay of the risk he took by preaching so boldly. Srila Prabhupada, my Guru Maharaj's contribution is that he defeated the caste Goswamis. He defeated this Brahmanism. He did it the same way as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Kiva Vipra, Kiva Nyasi, Shudra Kene Nyai, Jai Krishna Tattva Veta, Say Guru Hoy. Quote, there is no consideration whether one is a sannyasi, a brahmana, a shudra, or a grihastha. No, anyone who knows the science of Krishna, he is all right. He is Goswami, and he is Brahman. Yes. What does?
Bold.
Bold means is that you're not afraid. You do something without being afraid. Right? Like that. So here he's saying he's taking risks by preaching so strongly. He goes out without any fear and just tells people what he actually thinks and everything. So it's refreshing. Many people get involved.
Fear.
I see. The only other person I knew that asked this question was Hiranyakashipu. He did not know what fear meant. He was so. Fear means that you. In doing something, you're worried that you will be hurt in some way. You know, either your body will be hurt or your emotions will be hurt.
Headache?
No, not exactly. It would be, it wouldn't be something that's there. It's just like you would be afraid of, how do you say, you'd be afraid of fighting with Baladev because you might get hurt. Okay?
That's one thing
he's not afraid of. Huh?
That's one thing
he's not afraid of. Okay. Or you might be afraid of speaking in a class because you might say something stupid and people will laugh. Okay? Or you might be afraid of going and swimming in the pukur because there might be, you know, big crocodiles. Okay? That makes sense? Yes? So you're not afraid of fighting with Baladev? You stick
to
the, just grab onto the leg. Okay. You don't get near the arms. Okay. Just grab hold of them. Okay, so you can't walk, so he can't get you. Okay. The other boys attack him and then they get all the trouble. Okay. Smart. Okay, so then this is very bold. The caste Goswamis are the ones who will be established in, you know, in the ritualistic scenario, in the religious scene, the religious kind of, the influence of religion. They'll be the most prominent. They're born into these families. They're respected. They know all the rituals. They know philosophy. So many things. So. They will naturally be considered the prominent. But then those who are not born into those families, then they try to establish that they cannot do the same things, right? So the problem is they're thinking that the qualification for religious activities is the body. But actually the qualification for religious activities are the soul. When the soul is qualified, then it works very nicely. If the soul is not qualified, even if one is born in a Brahmin family, then by being born, it's just like if the father is a high court judge, by the son being born into the family, he's not automatically a high court judge. He has to qualify himself. But at the same time, being born in that family, there's always the best benefits. You know, because you see the mood, you see the determination, there's encouragement, they can help. Right? So it's easiest for them to become, but it doesn't mean it's automatic. And it doesn't mean that someone who's not, then they can't be. Does that make sense? So that's the whole position. Right? So he boldly is going out and preaching to these people. And it's a risk because they get very upset. They can create a lot of problems. So he preached, he was successful. Lord Chaitanya preached, he was successful in defeating them. And in doing that, establishing Krishna consciousness. We see Jesus also took on the same group like that. In the public eye, he defeated them, but they were a little upset, and so they didn't deal with him, so nicely. Right? But it didn't mean that his preaching wasn't successful. But we see that in all these cases, that a difficulty comes is that sometimes the actual spontaneity and mood of religion becomes covered by those who take it ritualistically or take it sentimentally. They don't actually know the philosophy. They just, based on sentiment, make you feel, you know, bad or create fear, and this way they motivate you. Rather than, it should be that it's due to, inspiration that you're engaged in devotional service, right? You're inspired to chant. You're inspired to worship Krishna, not that you're afraid if you don't, then there'll be some problem, you'll go to hell, all this and that. Right? That makes sense. But continuing what Prabhupada's speaking. But no one else taught that since Lord Chaitanya. This was my Guru Maharaj's contribution. And for this reason, he had to face so many vehement protests from these brahmanas of the caste Goswamis. Once they conspired to kill him, my Guru Maharaj told me personally, by his grace, when we used to meet him alone, he used to talk about so many things. He was so kind, he used to talk with me, and he personally told me that these people, they wanted to kill me. They collected 25,000 rupees and went to bribe the police officer in charge of the area, saying, you take these 25,000 rupees, we shall do something against Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and you won't take any steps. He could understand that they wanted to kill him. So the police officer frankly came to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Quote, of course we accept bribes and we indulge in such things, but not for a sadhu, not for a saintly person. I cannot dare. So the police officer refused and said to my Guru Maharaj, you take care, this is the position. This was because he so vehemently protested. Right? So even they got 25,000 rupees, which is a lot of money in those days. And they, went to the police, asked the police, and says, we're going to go do something. You know, they're not saying what. And so then you don't get involved, right? But then, police, they do those things, they take bribes, but his point was, it's not in connection with saintly persons. That's, beyond. That's not... I think it was once in a parikram. They were on a parikram going through Navadvip. I think it was parikram doing a big harinam and everything, and the Goswami is attacked, I think with gundas and all that. And they were actually trying to get Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So at that time, I'm not sure if he wasn't on the elephant or something, but he was going. And then Keshav Maharaj took him into a gully, so that he was out of the riot. And so they changed clothes. Keshav Maharaj, I'm not sure that he wasn't at the time, he might have been a grihastha. But I'm really not sure, but he might have been a grihastha. And so they switched clothes, and then Keshav Maharaj went back in as Bhaktisiddhanta, and Bhaktisiddhanta, he was taken to some other place. And then they, disbanded the whole thing, because then the people figured out Bhaktisiddhanta wasn't there. They thought he was, but he wasn't. So then the riot stopped, like that. So they actually did try. And he liked boldness in his disciples. Abhai heard of an occasion when one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples had been very outspoken at a public meeting and had denounced a highly regarded Mayavadi monk as a foolish priest. The remark had caused a disruption at the meeting, and some of the disciples reported the incident to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, thinking he would be displeased with his disciple, that his disciple had caused the disturbance. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was pleased and remarked, "He has done well." His displeasure occurred rather when he heard of someone's compromise. In other words, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would in no way ever appreciate political correctness. He just wouldn't. Srila Prabhupada once did a program on a campus, at a university campus in Stockholm in Sweden. And at that time, the Stockholmites, they were very much into this, you know, modern equality and all these different things like that. So the lecture that he chose to speak on was something on Varnashram. And within Varnashram, of talking about Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. And in speaking about Brahman, Vaishya, Kshatriya, and Shudra, he classified them, rather than just speaking, you know, the intellectuals, this, that, he classified them as first-class man, second-class man, third-class man, fourth-class man. Now, if you're speaking to a whole audience of people who this is not what they appreciate, that's very bold, right? And so he could have spoken on something else, but somehow or another at this university he specifically chose that. So he's speaking, and then at the end of the lecture he asked for any questions. So then one of the students then very loudly asked the question. So if, you know, you've spoken about all these, you know, people, first, second, third, fourth class men, what class are you? You know, expecting that Prabhupada's going to say first class, and therefore it'll start a whole riot. So the Prabhupada says, fifth class, says servant of all the other four, right? So then somehow or another they were impressed with that. They started cheering and clapping and all that, and so the lecture went very well, right? So the point is it's not political correctness. It's how well you understand the nature of the audience, the nature of the philosophy, and how to deliver it to the people. Does that make sense? That's the thing. So in other words, bold preaching means some people may not appreciate, but the same, you're going to find the same amount of people or more will appreciate. Does that make sense? So as much as they don't like it, that means there's going to be people who will like it. Right? So if somebody really hates it, that means somebody really loves it. But if you compromise, it means no one hates it, no one loves it. It was like, it was okay. How was the class? Yeah, nice. Right? You know what I'm saying? And then the one who was okay, then I've heard worse, you know, the person who wouldn't like it, yeah, I've heard better. You know. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada, when my Guru Maharaj was present, even big scholars were afraid to talk with even his beginning students. My Guru Maharaj was called Living Encyclopedia. He could talk with anyone on any subject. He was so learned. And no compromise. So-called saints, avatars, yogis. Everyone who was false was an enemy to my Guru Maharaj. Yes. Do we have any amplification system?
Will the Harinam dog
become a devotee in his next life because he's always on Harinam? I would expect so, because he likes Harinam, he likes the devotees, he likes Prasad. You know, you can't get better than that, right? Will he go back to Godhead? That I'm not sure. Could, if he gets the mercy of a devotee, but generally is that they become freed from all material contamination and all that, and then from that position then they take up devotional, you know, very advanced devotional service. But it is possible. It means Shivananda Sen's dog went back to Godhead, because Lord Chaitanya used to he used to be with the devotees, and Lord Chaitanya would feed him prasad. So he went back to Godhead. So it is possible. Yeah? Okay? Some godbrothers complained that this preaching was a chopping technique. Notice he said they complained, right? So we see even today people complain about Srila Prabhupada that he was so bold, or you know, just would be so strong, or people who speak strong, it's not good. But this has always been a complaint within and without of our line. And so we actually don't care. So his preaching was a chopping technique. And it would not be a success, they were complaining, it was a chopping technique and it would not be successful. But those who criticized him fell down. Right? So that's the point. The chopping technique, but what are you chopping? What are you chopping? Yes, the ego, the illusion, the concept of the material world. In other words, the material world is a reflected tree of the spiritual world. You cut down that tree, then you remove the illusion. Right? That makes sense? So that's the whole point, is it's not a problem. If one is not understanding the situation, here is in other words, a very powerful scholarly presentation is fine. Right? Means if you're making a very bold presentation for your own ego, that you just want to show how good you can preach, or you are trying to establish your position, your ego, over someone else's, then that being bold, that's not actually bold, that's just being egotistical. But where boldness here actually means is that the philosophy is not ours, right? The point is this philosophy is coming from Krishna and the previous acharyas. So that we can give this to others, right? We can give this to others, then that's our service. And because we have full conviction that it's correct, therefore we can speak it boldly. Does that make sense? So the boldness doesn't come because he's got attitude. The boldness doesn't come because, you know, he's puffed up. The boldness comes because he actually has full conviction in the benefit of hearing very clearly Krishna's philosophy and instructions as coming handed down in the parampara. Does that make sense? So one is a servant of this instructions of this philosophy. Therefore, one's bold. If you think you're giving the class, it's, you know, it's your knowledge, then of course you're being bold. There is false ego. But if it's thought this is not my knowledge, this is the knowledge coming from the previous acharyas, coming from the spiritual master, this is what's spoken by Krishna, then and it's good, everyone will benefit by hearing it, then that boldness is then actually service. So that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking about. So he established so much, he got so much support, everything is happening. We hear, except for the caste Goswamis, we don't hear of anybody else. So therefore nowadays, instead of the caste Goswamis, devotees are worried political correctness, you know, about, okay, the academics will be disturbed, or scientists will be disturbed, or, you know, the Women's Liberation Front will be disturbed, or something like this. Some political or other so-called educated persons who actually don't, are in illusion that they'll become disturbed. But the point is, if they're real academics, if they're real intellectuals, if they're really looking from freedom from disturbance in this world, then they would be very happy to hear Krishna consciousness. Because the only real liberation is connection with Krishna. The only real knowledge is in connection with Krishna. The only real understanding of the cause of creation is in connection with Krishna. You understand? So technically they should be happy. If they're not happy, that means they're not actually good academics. A real academic would be happy to hear about Krishna consciousness. Of course, you have to present it nicely, but they would be happy. If they're not happy, means they're an academic for their own particular purposes. They're not actually serving knowledge. They're taking advantage because they have knowledge. Then they are using knowledge as their servant to put them in a good position. So they'll never actually be that knowledgeable. You know what I'm saying? They won't be very inspired. But someone who sees knowledge as something that is important, that we must serve this knowledge. Knowledge is unlimited. There's no end of knowledge. We never actually become knowledgeable. We simply become a little more familiar with knowledge. Then that kind of person would be happy to hear Krishna consciousness. Yes? Serving knowledge would mean applying it? That would be the ideal. That would be the best. But at least appreciating it. Right? Because the beginning stage is appreciation. Next stage is serving. You know what I'm saying? In relationship, that's the natural next stage. Then you serve by studying it, teaching it, all these other things. Otherwise, you may appreciate the knowledge, you may study, so you're always appreciating it, but it's when you try to apply it or try to give it to others, then that becomes better. That's a better service. Taking service means I have this knowledge, and because of this knowledge, I am very special, so therefore I let everybody else know I'm very important because I have knowledge and they don't. They're fools, but I have knowledge. So, does that make sense? Yes, outwardly it may look the same depending upon their nature. But the one is that it's their ego that's more important. And for someone whose their ego's not, the knowledge is more important, then they're always happy to take knowledge further. In other words, how far they can understand they've gone. Now if someone can show them how to go further, they're happy. But if someone who's dealing on false ego, they think they are the most intelligent. So if someone else comes along and shows you can go farther, they become angry because then they're not the most intelligent. And it's an area that they can't understand. Like I've seen, even in devotees, is that you present an aspect of the philosophy, something subtle, and if they don't understand it immediately, they become upset with you. And claim that it's not actually important or bona fide or you've misunderstood because they can't understand it. So one still has to be humble and present it properly. Yeah? Yes. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was known as the Simha, Lion Guru. On occasion, when he saw someone he knew to be a proponent of impersonalism, he would call that person over and challenge. Why are you cheating the people with Mayavad philosophy? He would often tell his disciples not to compromise. Why should you go flatter? He would say. You should speak the plain truth without any flattery. Money will come anyway. Right? Because if you speak strong, people will appreciate it. Yes. Flattery means where you praise someone. You tell them how nice they are, or, you know, how this and that, and you know, so you go to the businessman and you flatter, oh, you're so nice, you're such a great devotee, you do so many different things, but your purpose is to get money from them. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's point was, you preach to them Krishna consciousness, then if they're nice, then naturally they'll give you a donation, money will come anyway. So in other words, you cultivate in them Krishna consciousness. You don't try to make them feel good so they give you money. Is that okay? Okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we'll end with this. Okay? Any other questions?
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.